food. It's a powerful symbol because it is so basic a need. Life is simply not possible without it. And when we eat together, whether we are feasting on our bounty or stretching our rations, we recognize our mutual need as bodily creatures. Eating together is an act of solidarity that binds us together. And this is why so many traditions have rules about who eats with whom. It matters who you get bound up with. It's why family dinners are so important. The relationships built over the dinner table. It's why wedding parties include feasts, as a new family, a new community is created. And our dependence on food also makes us vulnerable to manipulation, to suffering, to desperation, or on the other hand, to greed and to gluttony. And dependent as we are on food, passionate as we are about food, entire TV channels about nothing other than food, we are fundamentally incapable of providing it for ourselves, just as we are fundamentally incapable of making the rain come or the stars or the sun shine. Our food, our life, ultimately comes from God. And so it is no wonder that the whole Bible overflows with tales that revolve around food. Esau traded his birthright for a bowl of stew. Jacob's sons traveled to Egypt because of a famine. God fed Moses and the Israelites with miraculous bread from heaven when they wandered in the wilderness. Elijah and Elisha, those powerful, powerful prophets, each demonstrated that power through the miraculous provision of food. And the poetry of Isaiah, writing to a people suffering in exile, is filled with a vision of a heavenly banquet at which all creation is fed without bloodshed, without conflict. And then Jesus' own descriptions of the kingdom echo this vision of bounty and generosity. And his life was filled with dinner parties, with Mary and Martha and Lazarus, in the home of Simon Peter's mother, with Pharisees, with Zacchaeus, with sinners, with his disciples. And today we have the story of the feeding of the multitude, the dinner party to end all dinner parties. Jesus is tired, and he's gone off to seek some quiet, but the crowd has followed. Out into the wilderness, seeking healing, more desperately than Jesus is seeking quiet. And so moved to compassion, he cures their sick, working all day to care for them. And now, finally, it is evening. And the disciples want to send everyone on their way to find their own dinners. They themselves, being sensible sorts, have thought ahead and brought dinner with them. Jesus, however, refuses to break up the party. "They need not go away," he says. "You give them something to eat." It isn't hard to imagine the disciples' reaction to this obviously ridiculous instruction. There were 5,000 men, plus who knows how many women and children, being notoriously difficult to count. And there is simply no possible way the disciples could have brought enough food to feed this crowd. It's no wonder that their response leans toward sarcasm in the tellings of this story found in the other Gospels. In Matthew's account, however, they just observe that all they have is 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, a small meal, even if reserved only for themselves. But Jesus is undeterred. He takes what they have, blesses it, and gives it to the disciples so they can carry out his instruction. And the disciples give everyone something to eat, just as Jesus told them to do. And there were still 12 baskets of leftovers. This is the only miracle, with the exception of the resurrection itself, to be found in all 4 Gospels. And it is actually found twice in the Gospel of Matthew, with some variations. Now, this commitment to this story tells us that it relates a particularly crucial memory of Jesus' first followers. Everybody agreed that this story had to be kept, had to be shared. It says something so critical about who Jesus is and about who they are. And it isn't just the impressiveness of the deed. This is a man, after all, who raised the dead, who gave the blind their sight, who walked on water, who calmed a storm, stretching dinner, even to miraculous lengths, doesn't really compare to such feats of power. So what makes this story so unforgettable, so important? I think that has to do with what Jesus doesn't do, as well as what he does do. We'll start with what he does do. It's obvious. Jesus provides food to hungry people in the wilderness. This is a divine act, for provision comes ultimately from God. This miracle recalls all those stories of God's loving provision for the Israelites and the promise of the feast to come. And so in this miracle, Jesus claims this power for himself and embodies the will of God for all to be fed, for all to have life. What Jesus does not do is serve as host. He leaves that privilege for the disciples, even though presumably Jesus could have just done the whole thing on his own, made food out of nothing, out of rocks, served everyone in an instant. But he doesn't. He takes what the disciples have, and he blesses it, making it sufficient for the task. And then he gives it back to the disciples so that they may feed the people. In story after story, the host at the feast is God. But in this act, Jesus flips things upside down again and places his followers in the host's chair. And to be a host is a great thing. It's a sign of abundance and of power. You have enough to give. It's a sign of compassion and generosity. You have a desire to give. In allowing the disciples to host this feast of the multitude, Jesus transforms them from mere students or even simply dear friends into partners in the work of God. They need not go away, Jesus says to his concerned disciples. You give them something to eat. And then he makes it possible for them to do just that. How important that must have been to those first followers of Jesus, trying to sort out who they were after his death and resurrection and ascension, how they were to continue in his absence. This story was important not only because it revealed Jesus, but because it revealed them. It reveals us. The miracle does not only recall the salvation history that went before it, it points to the salvation history that comes after it and the role that Jesus' followers are to play. There was, of course, a meal at which Jesus did serve as host, a meal in which Jesus continues to serve as host. At the Last Supper he shared with his friends on the night of his arrest, Jesus took bread, blessed it, broke it, and gave it to his disciples. "Take and eat," he said to them on that night, as he provided them with the bread they would need to sustain themselves as partners in the work of God, in the ongoing unfolding of the story of salvation. "Take and eat," as he provided them with the bread they would need to feed the hungry and heal the sick and free the prisoner and proclaim the kingdom of God. "Take and eat," as he transformed them for the last time into hosts and not simply guests. And in just a little while, we will be invited to share this meal, to be joined to one another and to Jesus and to all of Jesus' followers from all times and in all places. We will acknowledge our dependence on the gracious generosity of God, giving our thanks and praise. We will offer ourselves to the service of God, which is the service of God's creation, that we may be the embodiment of God's will for all to be fed, for all to have life. For Jesus does not just say, "Take and eat," but rather, "Take, eat, and give them all something to eat too. And all will be fed. And there will be 12 baskets full of leftovers."